There is a saying known round the world that someone can be as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. The analogy may be recent, but the truth behind it is as old as humanity, for there are situations in all of our lives that make us twitchy and nervous, and we are not our best selves when those emotions rule the roost. And this is exactly how the religious leaders of Jesus' day were feeling. As we join the story this morning, they were nervous as long-tailed cats, and Jesus and his followers were the rocking chairs. We're barely through the first couple chapters of Mark's gospel. He's just getting going, really, but already Jesus has the institutional religious folks so upset that they're trying to assassinate him. He has brought on this apoplexy in them by stretching and reinterpreting or outright breaking rules that they hold sacred. Now, he does this, we now believe, on good and ultimate authority. But they were not privy to our insights. What they saw was a dangerous meddler, a disruptor of the peace, a blasphemer, and one who had to be stopped if their ways and if their rules were to be upheld. Adding to their discomfort was that Jesus was doing things that they themselves could not duplicate. Healings, exorcisms, and the like. And of course, he was also saying things that showed their conventional ways to be dative, that showed them in a negative light. In the few verses before we started today, he talked of not putting new wine into old, used-up wineskins. You've heard that one. Or not sewing a fresh, unshrunk patch of cloth onto a threadbare old garment. He's advocating for newness and rethinking and a fresh approach. And the long-tailed cats listening to him are getting twitchy. And I sort of know how they feel. I'm not elderly, as the world would measure such things, but I have gotten to that age when more and more often I'm throwing up my hands in the air and asking, isn't anything sacred anymore? And that emotion all comes to full flower in this morning's story. When Jesus and his hungry, plucky friends are crossing a field of grain and decide to snack along the way, even though it is the Sabbath, and even though such travel and such harvesting are against the rules. Well, finally, the Pharisees think, here's something we can talk to him about, something less miraculous and more concrete. Jesus, they say, why are your followers breaking the law? They don't mince any words, do they? You pose as a religious teacher, but you and your disciples flaunt the clear commands of the Scriptures. Defend your choices. And Jesus, our plucky Jesus, defends. He stands and defends with a story about their own revered King David, who sought nourishment for himself and his soldiers in the local temple, where they ate the consecrated bread. And they ate it for the simple reason that they were hungry and without food. And then he utters one of the more famous sayings he was ever to utter, that the Sabbath was made for us, not the other way around. And by extension then, the rules and regulations for Sabbath behavior should be in line with the purposes of the Sabbath, which are well known. They are for restoration. They are for contemplation. Sabbath is for healing after the labors of the week, right? God worked 6 long days and then God rested. And we have this pattern of Sabbath day, a day of recovery, a day of rest. And the rules for that day should be in that frame. The second story included in our reading today was even more to the point. In that one, Jesus challenges the long-tailed cats directly. Just kind of lines up that rocking chair and just prepares to squash down on them. He asks them, Which should be more lawful on a holy day, to do good or to do evil? Which would be better on a holy day, he asks, to heal lives or to destroy them? And they say nothing. Not because they don't know, but because they're caught. They are wedged between the obvious truth of what he says and the religious laws that say the opposite. They're thinking, of course, it should be allowed to heal and bless and improve things on a holy day. Of course. But those are not the traditions. And for these men, and many men and women like them throughout history, the rules come first. Whether they are just or unjust, whether they are sensible or arbitrary, there will always be people in our world for whom the rules are the predominant thing. So how do we understand this? Well, I think the key to understanding this scripture without descending into full bohemianism lies in the good judgment that Jesus teaches throughout his entire ministry. Of course, he understands that everything flows more smoothly when we follow the rules. But he also understands that not all rules are good rules. Not all rules are fair rules or relevant rules. And that part of the plucky Christian's task is to amend and to upgrade and to improve and to use Wesley's most beloved category, to perfect the standards of spiritual living. Over and above all for Jesus is this recurring notion that the laws and the rules are for our improvement, but not for our enslavement. They were made that life might be more functional. But as life changes, then the parameters that govern life would necessarily need to shift as well. Paul tells us that for freedom, Christ has set us free. And so I was particularly drawn to this quote from the well-known author Robert A. Heinlein. I would suggest that this is the kind of freedom that Jesus would endorse. Freedom informed by prayer and informed by spirit and informed by a grounded spiritual life. Here's what Heinlein said. I am free because I know that I alone am morally responsible for everything I do. I am free no matter what rules surround me. If I find them tolerable, I tolerate them. If I find them too obnoxious, I break them. I am free because I know that I alone am morally responsible for everything I do. Being morally responsible? Check. Not fixing blame on others? Check. Charting one's own best studied, reverent, ethical course? Check. I think that is what earns us the title, Plucky Christian.